For the Detroit Free Press, I'm Kerry Jr. II, and this is an election 2020 debrief. And one election it was this year. We're going to talk about what happened, all the pomp and circumstance, along with the drama that ensued. And then we'll talk about the transition from a Donald Trump presidency into a Joe Biden presidency. And today I have two guests. Would you mind introducing yourselves?
I'm Brian Dickerson. I'm the editorial page editor of the Free Press.
I'm Nancy Kaffer. I'm a columnist and member of the editorial board.
Wonderful. So, Nancy and Brian, thank you both for joining me today. What were your first thoughts about the election, like the day we were counting ballots, voting, everything leading up until we got the decision on who the projected winner was?
I don't personally think there's been a week that was quite as long, and that's saying something in 2020.
Very true.
I often wake up in the middle of the night, and usually I get a drink of water and go back to bed. But this past week, whenever I woke up at 2 or 3:30 in the morning, my first impulse would be, let's see what's going on in Pennsylvania.
I'm a night owl. I normally stay up late reading, but this time I was staying up late trying to understand the demographics of counties and states that I've, you know, never really been to. So that was a fun twist on waking up hollow-eyed and shaking in the morning.
Any general response to how it played out? And just,
well, it really did play out exactly how we were told it was going to play out. There was a big wave of red in-person votes and a slow but steady trickle of blue mail-in votes in the states that counted. But God, was it an awful experience waiting for it to unfold.
Brian's exactly right. I mean, this is what we said would happen. We said it was going to take a long time. It did. I think that the way we report things on election night hasn't necessarily caught up with this new reality, though. You know, you had very early in the evening CNN marking states red or blue, which were nowhere near being, you know, called for red or blue. It's just what was leading at that time, which I think on a normal election night might be a fine way to do it. But you know, in this particular situation, it's like, what about gray, folks? Gray's a color. I think that is, we're used to having our narrative set reasonably well on election night. And I think it's very hard to overcome decades of that being the experience, despite how well we told people, you know, how well we tried to prepare people that it was going to be a very different sort of election night.
I just want to say there are a couple of states in which they count the absentee vote, the mail-in votes early. And we had exactly the opposite reaction there. I remember early in the evening thinking, wow, Joe Biden is really doing surprisingly well in Texas and Ohio. And of course, he was doing nothing of the sort. It was just the reverse of the phenomenon we saw in Democratic states that count their mail-in ballots last.
And I think that's, you know, a lot of us kind of barely know the protocol in our own state, much less in other states. So it's really hard to track as you try to juggle every state in the nation counting with a different methodology on a different pace.
I'm not sure what's considered a clear win, but is this election something that ended up being pretty clear on who people wanted, but because of the delay in absentee ballot voting, it seemed a lot closer and a lot more tense than the results?
This isn't close. But you're right, the way it spun out over days made it seem a lot closer than it is. And a big part of politics is narrative. And once a narrative takes root, it's really hard to dislodge. So I'm not sure when we'll kind of give up this idea that it was close. But when the numbers are counted, it's a pretty it's not really a tight race here. Even in states that even states like, you know, Trump won Michigan by 10,000 votes in 2016, I mean, Biden's looking to win it by, what, 150,000 votes now? I mean, that's not a tight race.
I guess what's striking to me is how little people who voted in 2016 changed their minds about the candidates in 4 years. Most of the people who voted for Donald Trump in 2016 voted for him again this year. Most of the people who voted for Hillary Clinton voted for Joe Biden this year. And the difference was a lot of people who didn't vote in 2016 for whatever reason, because they weren't excited by either candidate or because they thought the result of that election was a foregone conclusion, but they didn't vote. And this year they did. And that was the difference.
The Trump campaign are still trying to fight the results that we got. You know, he's going to pursue whatever avenues he has through litigation. How does his actions putting doubt into our electoral system, how will that affect how we navigate our electoral process moving forward?
I think we're in troubling territory. I think that we have generally disagreed on the way things should be done in the country. You know, what social safety net policy should be, what access to affordable health care should be. We've disagreed on those things. But in general, we have not disagreed on the process and the institutions. And for the last 4 years, we've seen a big onslaught on our institutions. And this is a new and interesting, in a bad way, development. I mean, the president certainly has every right to pursue legal remedies that he feels he's entitled to. But to undermine the legitimacy of the vote is not something we have ever seen a person of his stature do in this country. And I deeply worry about the consequences of half of America, or even a third of America, believing that an election was stolen with, you know, really little evidence other than the president saying that it was, and how that affects our ability to be a functional country.
Carrie, you asked how voters are going to respond to this, and we're going to get an empirical answer to that question in about 6 weeks in the state of Georgia. The presidential race was very close in Georgia. Two Senate races were very, very close, and there are going to be runoffs in early January. Now, Donald Trump and the two incumbent Republican senators from Georgia have been telling their constituents in Georgia for the last week that the election there was rigged. Both senators have called for the resignation of the Republican Secretary of State in Georgia on completely unfounded allegations that he, you know, turned a blind eye to fraud and voter manipulation there. And there are two things Republicans in Georgia might do with that information. They might say, God, this process is rigged. I'm not going to participate in it anymore. It's a sham. In which case, the Republican Senate candidates are in bad shape going into that January runoff. Or they might be enraged by the theft of this, what they perceive as the theft of a presidential election, and doubly motivated to turn out in January. The Senate candidates and the White House have clearly decided that this is a way to energize voters. This is a way to get voters to the polls in January. And, you know, I guess we'll see.
But even if a majority in Georgia rejects this, and that's an accurate predictor of how the rest of the nation feels about it, there's still some portion of the population that believes this. And you know, Ezra Klein, writing in Vox, wrote a piece called, you know, Trump is attempting a coup before our eyes. And that is what's happening. He talks about a Hungarian socialist who talks about the stages of autocracy. And there's the stage called autocratic consolidation, which is when the autocrat attempts to detach his control from the electoral process, which is, you know, in places where autocracy has been successful, how you see people like Saddam Hussein winning election with 100% of the vote all the time because he's completely made the electoral process irrelevant. I mean, this may be a coup that's being attempted by people who aren't very good at it and who aren't going to be successful because their arguments are flimsy. And, you know, a majority of Americans may come out, you know, against it. But that's what's happening here. That's the attempt that's happening here. And it's pretty messed up.
So somebody said this morning that it's as though they're trying to bring down a skyscraper with a blowtorch. And they said they're not going to succeed, And at the same time, we shouldn't let them start a fire.
Another thing that's problematic is that you're using your blowtorch at the base of a building may not bring the building down right now, but you may successfully weaken the structure of the building such that the next, you know, big storm does damage right to it.
How impactful, Brian, I'm going to ask you, how impactful do you think Michigan was in Biden's win?
Well, it was a state he had to win. It became clear that this election was going to be resolved in the same band of states, the same three states, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and Michigan, that it was resolved in 4 years ago. So it was very critical. Democrats win in Michigan when they turn their voters out. It's not a swing state except in low turnout elections when most voters stay home. And then sometimes Republicans in a statewide election can take advantage of that. But it tends, at least over the last 20 or 30 years, it tends to be blue, especially in presidential elections. So it's critical. It's going to be critical as long as we have an electoral college. But I don't think it's going to be a big battleground state in the future.
Before you respond, Nancy, I want to give you your props, because when we spoke election night, you were saying the most important county in Michigan right now to look at in terms of how this state will go is to look at Wayne County. But
well,
same question to you.
I was right and I was wrong. Wayne County as a whole supported Biden at a higher level than they had Clinton in 16, 67,630 votes more than Clinton got in 2016. But Oakland County added 90,000 votes. So, the turnout in Wayne County and Detroit is absolutely significant, because you have to build your coalition and build your vote totals. There's not one handy thing that wins an election for you. But it seems like Oakland County overperformed Wayne County. And I appreciate you giving me props, but I'm not sure they're deserved.
Yeah. If you're a Democratic strategist looking at Wayne County and Detroit, this was a sobering and disturbing election.
I have two more questions, because I know we're running out of time. I'm over the time that I wanted from you two. But there's just two things I want to ask in terms of the importance of this election. The first one, for Nancy, what is the significance? We have our first Black woman, first South Asian woman in the White House, Kamala Harris. What is the significance of her being in her office as VP?
It's huge. I mean, I think a lot of us thought we were going to see a woman in the presidency in 2016, and it was. Really disappointing to not have that happen. I like Kamala Harris as a candidate from the beginning. I think she's fantastic. She's brilliant. She's going to be a credit to the country. And it's really wonderful to see a woman in that office. It's, you know, women still have a lot of barriers to get over. It's very surprising to me a lot of times that there's still mistrust, and more people than maybe they'll always admit are still sort of skeptical about female leadership. And I think this is a great, you know, path to kind of demonstrating female leadership, showing people that leadership can be female and be effective. I am a white lady, so I can't speak to the special significance that I have heard my Black and South Asian friends just sharing their absolute joy to see that representation in the White House. And I love it. I love it. I can't feel it personally the way those friends do, but it's amazing. And I really did wonder if we would ever be here. And so it's fantastic to actually be here.
I think it was obvious on the day that the networks called the election for Biden and Harris that people were at least as excited about Kamala Harris being vice president as Joe Biden being president. There's still sort of the expectation that Joe Biden may not be a two-term president. He'll be 82 years old for the next presidential election. So she could move to the forefront.
I say you'll love to see it.
My final question.
I just gotta say, when she came out on election night in that white suit, it was a real moment, dude. Guys, I'm actually tearing up here. Mm-hmm. It was a real powerful moment. I mean, if you don't know, white was the color suffragettes wore, and so female politicians have worn white in honor of suffragettes, the ones who got women the right to vote. This is, you know, we just passed the 100-year anniversary of women having the right to vote. This is very significant, and it was just so meaningful to see that.
One thing you have to acknowledge is the significance of people seeing themselves in positions of power and recognizing and understanding that that means something to people. Sure. So there's a lot of conversations around that, but that's one thing you cannot debate. Absolutely. My last question is just on the Biden administration and what to expect from them. We don't know the makeup of the Senate quite yet, but if Biden does not get the Senate majority, will the country be in a state of kind of legislative paralysis? Will we see anything really productive done for the first 4 years?
I can't wait till Mitch McConnell starts coming up with reasons why he doesn't have to confirm any of Biden's judicial appointments.
Well, I think there's plenty of reason to be pessimistic that we are looking at something similar to what happened after 2010, when the Republican Senate immediately declared its raison d'etre to be to oppose anything Barack Obama wanted to do. But the one difference is Joe Biden is a creature of the Senate, and he's dissimilar not just from Donald Trump in that way, but from Barack Obama and from George Bush
and Bill Clinton.
It's been a long time since you had somebody in the White House who understood Congress and particularly the Senate as well as Joe Biden does. And will that be a significant enough factor to overcome a Republican majority? I don't know, but it will be a factor.
I agree with Brian. I'm not sure that it can be done, but if it can be done, I think Joe Biden stands about the best chance of anyone to do it.
Free Press editorial page editor Brian Dickerson and columnist Nancy Caffer, thank you both so much for your time.
Thanks very much, Kerry.
It was fun.
Yes. Hopefully we could do this again in person one day.
distant dream.
That's a dream.
Yeah. Okay.